Hi, I'm Rob Grease and I'm the producer of Australian Rock of Ages, and it's a pleasure to bring you another program in this series of 24 monthly programs that will feature the life and time stories of some of the people whose talent, skills and dedication have contributed to the development of Australian music, particularly through the 1960s and 1970s. In this program, we feature the story of Marcy Jones. Marcy, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me into your home.
You're welcome. You're so welcome. I'm even going to give you lunch.
Well, there you go. Well, before we have lunch, could I start off by asking you, when were you born and whereabouts were you born?
I was born on the 26th of June, 1945, in, well, I say Brunswick, but I was actually born at the Sacred Heart Hospital in Moreland.
So I assume Mum and Dad were living in Brunswick at that stage.
So they were living in Brunswick with my grandmother, with my Nana,
right,
who actually came from Blackwood. She was born in Blackwood. All my relatives came out in the 1850s as miners, and on the Joneses' side, they were tailors.
Right.
They made all the uniforms for all the English and the police and stuff. But on the other side, they were gold miners on both sides of my mother's side. But, you know, Blackwood was just such a big part of our life. I'll talk about that in a minute. But I was born in Moreland on a cold and wintry, rainy night, and that was it.
Right.
Brunswick for the first 5 years of my life, West Brunswick.
Do you have any memories of the house at that stage?
Sure. Yeah, I remember it quite vividly. And it's amazing what I can remember. I was only a small child, and I can remember climbing up on Mum and Dad's wardrobe. How I got up there, I don't know, but I used to climb over everything, back gates, everything. And I'd go to kinder, and I didn't like the teacher. She wouldn't give me the colour plasticine I wanted. I was four. I mean, she could have been. She wasn't nice. So I came home on my three-wheeler bike over Sydney Road and a couple more down to Holloway Road, and I came home three times. In the end, Nana said it was pointless taking me, so I learnt more at home anyway with my grandmother. And my grandfather died when I was about two, but they played accordion and fiddles, and all my uncles played banjo and piano and the spoons, and you know, my mother played piano. My dad was a bricky, and Welsh, and he didn't sing, and he couldn't even dance in tune. So all the music actually came from the Celtic side, from the English side.
Yes.
But they were great times. I've written songs about it. Actually, I've given you my new album. There's a song on that called My Old Cooking Pot, and that's about my grandmother had this old pot and she filled it full of love, so it was full of yummy things to eat, and my mother did the same and I did the same.
I have this old cooking pot, it's really old, you see. My nan left it to my mum, then she left that pot to me. My mother cooked all kinds of things, soups and great chutneys. I couldn't do without that pot, it's full of love, you see. When I was a little girl, I used to stay with Nan. She lived in a teeny tiny house in old Blackwood town. She'd sit and play her squeeze box. We really had the lot. And on her old black stove, she'd have that cooking pot. My old cooking pot, my old cooking pot, my old cooking pot is full of love, you see. My old cooking pot, my old cooking pot, my old cooking pot that my mother left to me.
But they were great days. I remember walking down the hallway, or so they tell me, singing at the tops of my voice. And, of course, my first stage was the dining room table in the dining room with everybody sitting around playing. It was a very musical family, and my Uncle Alan played in dance bands.
Right.
So he played swing music in lots of dance bands and worked with Billy Hyde, and for people out there that know a lot of the old musicians, and Fred Hoskings. They were very well-known musicians in Melbourne.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned Dad was a bricklayer.
Yeah.
Was Mum a stay-at-home mum or did she have a job?
She was a stay-at-home mum because my Nana had three... She had three brothers and they were all living at home before she had me. And so she was expected to stay home and help my Nana. And all the boys went out to work. She would have loved to have gone out to work. I think at around about the time of the Second World War, she got a job putting duct transfers on baby baths. And another job she had was sewing in a big factory. I think the first day she put the needle through her finger and that was about that. But Mum always wanted to do things and didn't really have the confidence to do it.
Mm.
You know, when she was a child and anybody came, she'd hide under the bed. She was very shy, my mother.
Goodness, okay.
But my grandmother was out there. And I'm like her.
I was going to say, you must have got the genes from grandma.
Oh, I'm like Minnie May. I'm so like her. I even look like her. And on the music side of it, and on the other side of it, my father's father was a bricklayer and he had his own business, E.V. Jones and Sons, and my dad left school at 14 with his brother, Uncle Charlie, and they laid bricks for 13 and 14. But I have Ernie Jones. I have his love for Arga stoves, beautiful old cars, anything polished walnut doors.
That sounds like expensive taste.
He could afford it. And his house, and I'd go there and I'd look at things and I'd go to touch the doors and he'd say, "Don't get your finger marks all over the doors." I'm saying, "Just looking," you know, and here it was. And he had a big four-oven Arga, and that's the first time I ever saw one and fell totally in love because I'm a bit of a mad cook. So one day, if ever I won Tats Lotto, the first thing I would buy is a four-oven Arga. Not a car, not a sharp car. I have this beautiful, big, gorgeous thing. Oh.
Now, you mentioned that your very first experiences in the formal schooling weren't that crash hot. But when you went to primary school, did that change?
When we moved to Box Hill, I went to Box Hill Primary School. And I was only there, I think, 18 months or something like that because they were building a brand new school in Box Hill North.
Right.
And at Box Hill Primary School, I met my girlfriend Glenda, and we're still pals today. And we're still besties, you know?
Amazing.
Yeah. And then we were moved to Box Hill North Primary School, which was only across the fence from Glenda's. And there we met our other friend, Jo. Well, actually, I met her riding my horse up the street and she just moved into Box Hill North. And I said, "Hello, I'm Marcia and I live down the road." And she said, "I'm Jo and I live in there." And I said, "Do you want a dink?" She got on the back of the horse and we've been friends forever.
Horse, at what age was this?
Oh, I was nine.
So how did a horse come into your life?
Oh, well, you see, other people had bikes to get around. I had a horse because when we moved from Brunswick to Box Hill North, we had nearly 10 acres of old orchards. They were pear, apple and quince, but they weren't used because it was all orchard country back then, 1950. The 50s, it was all orchard. And some big orchards were still a going concern, but we all had horses. So we rode to Borwin for Pony Club, through people's properties, as long as you shut the gate. I got very good at useful horse and pony. And that's about all my horse would do anyway. I had a Welsh cob and he'd just clomp along, you know. Anyway, so we rode our horses everywhere. None of this floats, and my mother didn't drive anyway, and my dad laid bricks 7 days a week, so there was nobody to drive a car with a float. If we wanted to go to the to have the horses shod or anything like that, we'd have to ride up to the farrier in Box Hill, go to the Gymkhana's over in Box Hill South. We rode there and we rode back. We rode to Baldwin and we rode back.
Sounds like it was a very healthy childhood.
Yeah, it was.
Lots of outdoors.
Oh, we were always outdoors. I didn't play hockey and basketball and stuff like that. I rode my horse.
Right.
And Glenda had a horse, Tawny Angel, and my Gypsy, and Joe rode another one of Glenda's horses, and we just set off in the morning and came home when it was getting dark, and that was it.
How long did your love with horses go for?
Well,
did
I still
go into your teens?
Oh yeah, I still love horses. I rode till I was 18.
Right.
Then Gypsy got a bit small for me, and I didn't want to sell him, so I gave him to a young girl who loved horses and loved riding horses, and she used to come down and ride him in the paddock. So I said, look, you can have him as long as when you get too big for him, you have to find another young girl to give him to. He's not to go to boys, because the boys in those days used to bloody, they'd thrash him around.
Yeah.
And Gypsy was a girl's horse. He loved the girls, and he'd nibble your bottom, and he was lovely. And I didn't find out what happened to him until years and years and years and years later. I was doing a show up in Queensland, and a lady came up to me after the show and she said, I was the last one to have Gypsy.
Oh, really?
I said, I'm so glad you're telling me now and not before the show, because I'm bawling my eyes out. I said, what happened to him? And she said, oh, one day she just went out to the paddock and he was asleep in the paddock. He just ran his age down.
Yep. So he had a great life then.
Well, the last girl that had him, she grew up and she didn't hand him on then, because he was getting too old. She just kept him. And looked after him and spoiled him.
Yep.
So that made me very, very happy. Because when I got to 18, I got my license, and at 15 and a half, I started singing at all the local dances.
Right.
So Canterbury Ballroom, Preston Circle, later on Preston Town Hall, and Rocklin Iris Rock, Sunshine Rock. But I started off at Canterbury Ballroom because I was going down with my girlfriends one night, and my dad used to take us down in his little green truck. We'd all get in the back with our dresses on. God, it must have been a sight. And then he'd come by after the dance, pick us up, and he'd take us home.
Right.
And quite often he used to give Bobby Bright a lift home as well.
Right.
So, you know, we go right back to Normie Rowe. He was 14, I was 16 doing the dances, and Peter Doyle. And so we all started out together.
Now, when you say doing the dances, can I get you to clarify, was this as a singer or as a girl going to dances to dance?
Well, I used to go to the dances to dance, but the boyfriends at that time, or the, you know, the boyfriends, they used to go out shooting, and I hated shooting.
Right.
Or they used to go out car racing, and I didn't like car racing. So the girls, my girlfriends and I, Glenda, Joe, and then later on Issa, we would go to all the local dancers to dance because of the music.
Sure.
And one night we were there at Canterbury and Malcolm Arthur and the Thunderbirds were playing. I think Colin Cook was playing saxophone and Henry Bors. And and then later on Tony Buchanan. But the girl said, oh, our girlfriend sings. Can she get up and sing a song? Of course, they always say no.
Of course.
But, you know, we're looking for a girl singer, so if she likes to come along next Saturday and audition, she can. So I went along on the following Saturday and sang Stupid Cupid, Lipstick on Your Collar and Robot Man, and got the gig. And that was the beginning, and that was with the Thunderbirds.
You must have been absolutely chuffed.
I was 15 and a half. I just went along with things. Okay, I've got a gig here. How many songs? Okay. You know, it was sort of like I fell into it like that, but I was meant to do it.
How did Mum and Dad feel about this?
Oh, my mum and dad were cool. And my dad took me and he picked me up until I got a car.
All right.
And that's when I stopped riding horses, because I got a car. Also, I left work as an apprentice hairdresser at 15 and a half, 16. I was older than that. I was 19 when I left hairdressing. I'd almost finished and was picked along with a lot of other people from the dances to do the Go Show, which was the first teenage television program besides Bandstand.
Yes.
And this came out of Melbourne at Channel O in those days.
That's right.
Yeah. And Dennis Smith was one of the producers, and Julian Jover. And there was a company, and Dennis will kill me, but I can't remember everybody in the company.
Oh,
DYT Productions. Anyway, so we started doing that, and then the dances were four nights a week. I was hairdressing 6 days a week, and Anyway, so it all got too much. And I asked the lady who I worked for, I asked her, could I have every second Tuesday afternoon off to go and do the show? Now, I worked Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, late night, Friday night, and Saturday till about 3 o'clock. No overtime.
No.
Nothing extra, nothing. And the cow wouldn't give me off half a day a fortnight. So I went home to my dad, and, you know, my dad had been, as I said, a brickie all his life, and I said, what do you think, Dad? He said, you do what you want to do, darling. He said, you do what you think. I said, I'm going to throw it in. So I threw in work, and then Channel O gave me a contract for 2 years with an option of each year that it went. So I actually did the show for as long as it ran. Yeah.
Can I just go back a little bit? We've established you came from a very musical family.
Yeah.
But during the 50s, particularly the middle part to the late 50s, Australia started to tap into what was happening in the US just prior to all the British music.
Sure.
Who was influencing you? Who did you?
Oh, Connie Francis.
Right.
I did a lot of Connie Francis songs. Brenda Lee, did a lot of Brenda Lee. I wasn't the real Rocky. I was more the crooner type singer, you know?
Yes.
And the ballady type singer, you know?
So did radio play a large part of your life at that stage? Otherwise, where were you hearing this music?
Oh, yeah. Well, we listened to Stan Rove and we listened to all the other radio stations that played all the pop music. So that's where we got it. Plus, you know, I had my favourite singers and things like that. And then when I got to do the Go Show, we would choose, and if we didn't have a record of our own out, then we would choose something from the top 40, top 10. So I got to know a lot of that stuff. I need love. And Tina Turner, I did a lot of her stuff. So I was always the really bright opener and I was the really, wow, closer, you know. It wasn't very often I got to sit on a seat and sing, you know, colouring book or something like that, you know.
Yes.
But that was okay.
Was that an exciting time for you?
When we were doing the Go Show, and well, the dancers were great, and we learnt a lot about performing. We learnt a lot about handling different situations.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, well, sometimes there'd be a brawl in front of you or something like that. You know, there'd be a bit of a fisticuff. Not so much at Canterbury Ballroom and Preston Circa. We were much more demure there and they came to really dance. Preston Town Hall, there'd be sometimes a few blues.
Get it rough, yes.
You know, but you just had to learn to handle everything. I was pretty lucky with the boys, with the... I don't stand for any nonsense.
Right.
I've never stood for any nonsense. And if I've had to, a couple of times I've biffed a couple of blokes.
I can believe that.
Oh, I have. That can be a story for a bit longer, but I biffed one of the Richmond boys. He ended up on his backside on the floor. I seem to react and I handle things quickly. And the same as rehearsing with all the different bands, because it's a boys' club.
Of course.
You know, and the girls come in and you've really got to keep yourself nice. You know, I always sort of had a steady boyfriend at one stage or then another steady boyfriend. You know, they used to come and go, but I didn't go out with a lot of blokes, a lot of boys at one stage. There's a few fisticuffs in front of my house when a couple ran into each other, but my dad came out and fixed that. That's it.
I'm sure he did, yes.
Don't mess with George Jones. Anyway, the dancers were a way of learning your songs, and the boys paid me a lot of respect. And they try you. Charlie Gould tried it on me. He's gone to God now, poor Charlie. But he was 17 and he was being a bit of a smarty pants. I won't tell you what he said in my ears. It was pretty gross. It's in my book.
Okay.
It's in my book. But once I got up enough courage to tell him to F off, because I thought if ever I said that word, I would go immediately directly to hell, never ever to surface again.
Oh.
You know, it was like you just didn't say those words. And so one day after I'd had enough of him, I turned around and I said, Charlie, and that was the end of that. That was fine. He laughed. He didn't do it again. He was just being what he thought was a smart little Scottish booger.
Yep.
But I never had sexual stuff happening. I never had that. All the blokes were really good and really respectful. I worked with the Raiders for a while. Barry Roy was in the Raiders. Can't think of all the different players now. Barry's still such a good friend to this day and a very astute musician. We're very well respected. The same with as my partner is Murray Robertson from the Thunderbirds. Well respected, and all the boys in the Thunderbirds. But I didn't take any nonsense and I was good at what I did. And I think when you come up and you know your work and you know exactly what you're doing, they know. They're not going to make it too difficult for someone they don't really want to lose.
Yes.
Because, you know, anything would have happened. I talked to one television director at one stage. I won't mention his name either, but he's quite well known. And he'd had lots of the girls around and on the show. And I said to him, why didn't you ever try it with me? What was wrong with me? And he said, and what would you have said to me?
Okay, he'd already tuned into you, yes.
I said, I would have told you to stick your show up your nose as far as you can shove it.
Right.
You know, so he knew and he said to me, and besides, you could sing.
Right, so respect.
So respect. And this is what I've said to girls today. You've got to go in not thinking, well, I'm a girl singer and these are all the boys. You go in as an equal. I'd be great for teaching women about being equal in jobs. And you go in and you're as good as they are or better than they are.
This program is a Handsome Doc production and is podcast through the Toorak Times and TAG.